Thanks for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoy it. The show notes are included in the summary for each episode. Notes can be accessed from the Mobile Marketing Podcast link at the top and bottom of the dominoresearch.com website. If you like the podcast, please take a moment to help us out. Rate and review us on your preferred medium. We are currently available on iTunes, Google Play Podcast, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Thank you. Hey there, and welcome to the latest episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy, the podcast that helps you navigate the ever-changing landscape of mobile marketing.
As the world watches, Canada is closing in on 1 year of cannabis legalization, and there's a lot that's happened over the course of this last year. No one could expect that the CEO of a major LP is ousted, an LP itself lost its cultivation license, nor that the black market is still going strong. Wait, people did predict that one. This and more on today's podcast. Welcome to another episode. I'm Hazel Fruitman.
And I'm Kim Stewart. And before we get into the latest with Canada legalization, let's talk about this podcast. We started it a couple years ago as a way for our current and prospective clients to get information at their own pace about using mobile marketing and advertising to increase revenue, to boost their bottom line, and generally find success in reaching out to customers.
And we have found that it's a very effective medium to share our thoughts about what's working and what's not, whether it's relevant to the type of business they're running, and to get new ideas for implementation that really makes businesses who are doing mobile ad campaigns get the results they are looking for with them.
The great thing about this podcast is that it's not only geared towards mobile marketing, although that is the main focus, it's also a good source of ideas for your campaigns. And since many of our clients are in the cannabis space, we also provide listeners a resource for cannabis industry news and ideas. Take a listen to some of our archived episodes to find out what's happened in Canada so far. Hazel hosted an episode on the path to legalization. It was number 48, to discuss the situation and to talk about the realities of how this bill would get through the legislature, figuring out how they would police it, and discovering whether or not the provinces could afford to resist it or whether or not they should get on board.
That's right. And the first week into it, I shared my experiences on the front lines in Toronto as I spent the eve before legalization and the first few days at industry and consumer events, checking out everything from the lines to getting into parties, celebrating Canadian adult use legalization, to checking in with friends who have all used their office address to have their OCC purchases delivered. That's on episode 79.
And 6 months into legalization as we know it, that was episode 87, and it was a quick update on what had happened so far in terms of the good, the bad, and the ugly. We wrapped it up with some thoughts on where the situation should be headed versus where it might be headed, and we talked a bit about what could be coming down the pipe with additional products in the marketplace. So today is no exception. Hazel, where do you want to start today?
Well, there's a lot of ugly going on that we could not force, so we will start with some goodish news. Many cannabis advocates have worked with the Canadian government to get past cannabis convictions overturned since it's no longer a crime. And the government announced in the summer that pardons are now available for Canadians convicted of simple cannabis possession. They introduced Bill C-93, which enables Canadians to obtain a free, no-wait pardon for simple possession of cannabis. Federal Justice Minister David Lamenti, he says, we know that this is particularly significant for many in minority communities, including Black and Indigenous Canadians, who have been disproportionately affected by the enforcement of cannabis laws.
So what's this going to look like then on records going forward?
Well, the pardon is not an expungement, which involves having a conviction completely wiped off the books. And activists are criticizing the law for not going far enough. They say a criminal record can be reinstated if it's not expunged.
So how many people do you think that this will affect in Canada?
This will affect upwards of 250,000 Canadians with minor convictions and opens up employment opportunities for them. This bill is a good start, but those cannabis advocates say it stops short and we will need full amnesty, that it's just a token gesture. Jody Emery, one of the most popular advocates, states, the federal government's proposal for pot possession pardons It's not really about genuine liberty and won't truly help most of our pioneers and prohibition victims.
So, okay, I can see why there's a discrepancy for those who have worked a lifetime for it and are still not able to benefit as others are behind, say, LPs. I mean, you know, big business benefits, that could be a hard pill to swallow.
That's right, Kim, which leads us to our next point. If you are now wanting to grow, cultivate, there are more steps, more obstacles to jump through, which means more money and more wait times. Health Canada has made changes to apply to become an LP by now having facilities set up ready to go as if you are already in operation. And Health Canada may still say no after that.
So you're telling me that Health Canada wants you to sink millions of dollars into a facility, administration, writing up an application, proving that you're good to go, and they still may not actually license you?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. The changes came about after Health Canada, the federal health agency in charge of licensing process, was swamped by applications for LPs, putting a strain on its resources and causing months of delays for applicants. The agency has received over 800 applications for cannabis licenses since 2013, and of those, 457 have passed the initial paper-based review, but 70% of them have not yet to show any evidence that they have built a facility.
So this has created a backlog, and it doesn't look to be slowing down. Because it limits the ability of smaller companies to attract investment, this could, I suppose, leave the sort of fledgling Canadian industry to be dominated by companies with deep pockets and operational LPs, although there have been a few LPs in the news lately.
Yeah, sure, there has. Like Hexo have bought up New Strike Bands, which is a good move. They're a Quebec LP. They have the first female cultivator, and they actually run a brilliant facility.
Cool.
Yeah, they purchased Up, which is also an LP. It was the tragically hip invested into them.
Gorgordy.
yeah, where they grow. Where they grow and they use vibrations and music to grow the plants. So I wonder if that will continue to happen or not with the buyout.
Okay, well, I see. So what else is happening in the LP world? Come on.
Well, I know, Kim, you're dying for me to talk about Canopy Growth and CanTrust.
Yep.
I'll start with Bruce Linton, the CEO of Canopy Growth, who recently got fired after the last board meeting. Many of those in the know predicted that it was going to happen, and he was a bit of a scapegoat for in this instance. Canopy Growth, the largest LP according to stock reports, with over $4 billion to play with, thanks to Constellation Brands, did not see eye to eye with Bruce. Bruce, who bought anything and everything up in the cannabis space, from grows, cultivation, extraction, anything he liked, really, he did buy it because he could. They really are the only LP to have celebrity brand products such as Seth Rogen's houseplant. Martha Stewart is planning a CBD project with them. And it kind of goes in contrary with the Cannabis Act that states no endorsements. So we'll see what's going on with that. Many of the industries don't understand CG's value proposition with the infusion of cash from Constellation Brands. They want their person in there to replace Bruce, make it their own, shifting to cannabis beverage market as a big chunk of it. So we'll see what the future holds, but I see that's the direction they're headed in. And Bruce, fresh off his firing, was at NCIA.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that he was still keynoting the conference, especially after his firing. And NCIA changed the keynote from Bruce to their chief brand officer at Canopy Growth, but within 48 hours, NCIA changed it back to Bruce as the keynote. So he's not able to work in Canada, and when it's all said and done, he announced to us he was looking for a job, maybe linked with pets, maybe some CBD projects he's going to work with, so who knows what's going on with that.
Right, so Bruce got fired. Bruce got to pitch his new job search in front of thousands and thousands of people. Canopy Growth is going to live on. Okay, so what about CanTrust? Are they going to live on?
I'm not sure that they will, Kim. CanTrust lost its license and effectively is out of business.
So what exactly happened there?
Well, they are a perfect situation where disgruntled employees blew the whistle on their growing practices. They thought they were above the law and pulling one over the eyes of Health Canada. And they would have gotten away with it still if it wasn't for these employees.
So can you explain a little further what non-compliant growing practices they were actually accused of?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the facilities in Ontario was cultivating cannabis in 5 rooms that were not known or approved by Health Canada. So they were able to ramp up production, yet were non-compliant rating for giving inaccurate information. So these 5 rooms amounted to over 27,500 pounds of cannabis. And not only that, CanTrust exported some of it to Denmark, and it was sold. So Denmark is now taking it, and it's in quarantine.
So who at CanTrust is actually going to be held accountable for all this?
Well, the CEO, Peter Aisto, was fired, and longtime chairman Eric Paul resigned. The stock prices have collapsed, and the remaining inventory is pulled off the shelves.
So really, everyone associated with CanTrust, even at the highest level, is being scrutinized. You know, this is going to place challenges in terms of the reputation for Canadian suppliers of medical cannabis into the international markets that they serve. So, okay, another thing that comes to my mind when we're talking about Canadian cannabis news, I know that the second Ontario lottery occurred recently. What do you have to say about that?
Yes, I have a lot to say.
Okay, well, yeah. Go for it.
Basically, Ontario cannabis outlets were chosen through a lottery system. The first 13 stores opened up across the province, where all you needed basically was a name, the entrance fee. A few thousand applicants applied, and it didn't matter if you're in the space or not.
That's an interesting take on it, especially when Health Canada wants LPs to have fully running facilities without licenses.
Yeah. And now we were just on the second round lottery, and that just happened, and it's actually still a real shit show. The stores aren't even operational yet. This time they needed to have the storefront rented. You need a line of credit, a storefront, and there were 5,000 applicants applied for this, and 42 licenses given out, 12 for native reserves, and 13 in Toronto and the surrounding GTA. So now before I get into the results, I just want to mention a few things here.
All right, go for it.
So first, the province, this is for the province of Ontario only. Prior to legalization, there were storefronts getting closed down all throughout the city. One lounge in Toronto that's existed before legalization called Hotbox.
We went there.
Yeah, we went there to a
function last year. Yeah, got it. Okay.
You know, they've been serving clients for real for years. They're located in Kensington Market in a very hip location. And yeah, we met Abby, the owner. We know her. Well-respected and is actually the president of Normal Canada. She even has a storefront ready to go right when she won the lottery. However, she didn't win. She's a real advocate that does everything it can to be in the cannabis culture in Toronto without actually selling the flower. And then, there's one particular illegal dispensary called Cafe.
Allegedly illegal.
Yes, allegedly illegal. Thank you. They have a few locations, allegedly, and to this day, they're still serving customers.
Allegedly?
On a side note, they are actually really sleek-looking stores, despite the concrete block walls that police have put in front of them so no one can get in or out. Because Cafe is actually an illegal dispensary, Cafe is persisting, stepping up in front on the sidewalk with employees with iPads in hand.
So, wait a minute. How does this work? Just a few handshakes on the street, one with money and the other with weed?
Well, not really. Cafe allegedly has a website that is operational where you could buy allegedly flowers and vapes and oils and edibles that are legal right now and will be legal in the next year.
But allegedly.
Allegedly. But all of it was, you can use it, you can pay for it using e-transfer. then go to the outlet and it magically appears for you. So it's been driving the police crazy trying to keep them from operating.
So who are the people behind Cafe? How are they not in jail?
Well, you know, they are two men in their 40s. They both live in the condo building above where this cafe is allegedly located.
Okay.
In fact, one of them lives in the penthouse.
Go figure.
Yeah.
They also have criminal records?
They do have criminal records. And, you know, they just want to keep it, the cafe open. They believe it's a right for everyone to get whatever they want at any time. They have petitions going. And despite more than 70 provincial charges have been laid against Cafe's staff and landlords since November, the city says. So,
okay, so Cafe allegedly running an illegal business. Toronto trying to stop them running an illegal business. How do they continue to exist?
Well, they do. And can you believe it, Kim? That location won the lottery.
Okay, wait a minute. So how can a criminal or a pair of criminals, allegedly, win a lottery to have a retail store in a location that has an allegedly criminal retail store now?
Right. Well, it's sort of. The son of ex-co-founder of Feria is the name of the licensed lottery winner. And it shows the same address as Cafe, seemingly to avoid all the conflict at first. And remember how Hotbox, the polar opposite, Abby, who does everything correct, well, poor her, she didn't win. I mean, we love her, but...
So this is interestingly looking like some Washington, D.C. politics in America. So the Cafe is owned by two criminals, and they get a license... Because they perhaps are friends with a co-founder of Afria?
The son of a co-founder of Afria. Yeah, allegedly. So it appears that way, and I'm sure it's going to be up for scrutiny. The lottery gives them the opportunity to get a licensed shop now. However, the owners will have to go through a background check.
So does that mean that your regulators are actually going to take a look at the winner and see whether or not there's some monkey business, funny business going on here? I mean, and if it is, does that mean there'll be a reissue of that license?
That's exactly what it's going to be. That's exactly how it's going to happen. It will take time to do that. But
maybe Abby will win.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe she's next on the list. You know, they'll take a closer look at it. It's not necessarily, you know, a bad business strategy to secure a location that allegedly already has a customer base and is known for being an alleged dispensary. So it's also interesting that the owners of the cafe is in close relations with the ex-co-founder's son at Feria. So at least we know that the black market weed is still going strong.
Well, maybe it's coming from CanTrust.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, this lottery system doesn't really sound like it's been thought through very well.
You're absolutely right. It's not. And it's especially when the addresses now for these new retail locations have all been clustered into areas of Toronto instead of spread nicely throughout the city. There are way too many on Queen Street. And a small town outside of Toronto, Innisfil, there was three of them within 200 meters of another. So I'm sure that they'll be requesting to move locations.
Okay, well, that's a lot about what's been going on in Canada. And I know there's still a lot more to come with the alleged introduction of the edibles market before the end of the year.
Yes, there is. Of course, to our listeners, we will keep you updated with all the Canadian cannabis news. So thanks for listening.
So you can reach us at cannabiswallet.net, and we are happy to get back to you in a relatively short period of time. So until next time, have a great week.